Monday, November 8th, 2410, 1729 Campanella Street, New Avalon, Zeta Cygni. The uniformed cops working crowd control around the crime scene were accustomed to seeing official vehicles turning up, from ambulances to the big black sport utes the IPO crime lab people drove. Indeed, when a large vehicle detached itself from the sparse flow of traffic on Campanella and pulled to the curb with a blue light flashing behind its grill, they at first assumed it was another CSI arriving on the scene, until they took another look and realized it wasn't anything like one of those rides. It was a big black car, long, low, and somehow sleek and burly at the same time, and it had a lot more chrome than a modern vehicle would sport. Despite its station wagon-like body, it had tail fins. Big ones. In another life, it had been a 1959 Cadillac ambulance, and for these young cops, seeing it pull up to the curb now was a bit like watching a three-decker warship from the great age of sail heave to. Then they saw the gold symbol on the door, an upraised fist holding the grip of a sword above the block letters BPRD, and understood. Nothing was ever quite normal when the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense got involved. After that realization, seeing the people who got out of the converted ambulance was almost not a shock. Great big red guy with filed down horns, a tail, and a right forearm that looked like it had been borrowed from a statue twice his size. Blue-gray fish guy who didn't conform to any known aquatic sentient species? Sure, why not? This was New Avalon, after all. "Fellas," said the big red guy with a cordial nod as he ducked under the yellow tape. A-Reproductions Unlimited and Bacon Comics Group present BPRD, Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense, Volume 1, Number 27, The Curse of the Big Train. Devised, plotted, and scripted by Benjamin D. Hutchins. That would be me. Bacon Comics Chief, Derek Bacon. Detective Sergeant Barbara Gordon of the New Avalon Police Department's Special Crimes Squad fared better than the uniforms. After all, she was expecting the BPRD contingent, and she'd met them before. "Hellboy, Abe," she said, "glad you could make it." "No problem," Hellboy replied. "What have we got?" "We're not sure," said a ginger-haired man in a suit as he emerged from an alley between two red brick warehouses. "That's why we called you guys." "Hellboy, Abe, I don't think you've met Horatio Kane. He's the day shift supervisor for the IPO crime lab. H, meet Hellboy, and this is Abraham Sapien. They're from the BPRD." Kane nodded and shook hands with the two paranormal investigators. "Actually, we have met," he said.
"Oh?" Gordon asked.
Hellboy grinned. "Abe and I made the mistake of trying to take a vacation last year. Didn't know you'd left Alderaan," he added, nodding to Kane.
"You get tired of the constant sunshine after a while," said Kane sardonically, adjusting his wool overcoat.
Fall was sliding crisply toward winter in New Avalon, where the climate had been tailored to reflect a more northerly latitude than Kane had been accustomed to as a member of the Aldera police.
"What we know," Kane went on as he turned and led the other investigators into an alley between two warehouses, "is that we have human remains, but I've never seen anything like this before."
Hellboy stood and looked down at what had once been a person. The body was sprawled up against the brick wall of one of the warehouses. The Puckett's Landing district was a sort of waterfront extension of the mill race, and shared its more famous neighbor's faux Victorian industrial brickwork architecture. Contorted into an unnatural position, arms drawn up, legs straight, Hellboy could see just from the way it lay that it was as stiff as a board. What was surprising about it, though, was that it was mummified. The skin was blackened and pulled tight against the bones, with basically no flesh intervening. It was dressed in rags that looked like they'd once been sportswear. A warm-up suit, maybe, the sort people would wear to go jogging in this kind of weather.
"Looks like this guy's been dead for quite a while," Hellboy remarked. "Nobody noticed him before now?"
"That's the part that makes it so strange. He hasn't been dead for quite a while," Kane said. "The first thing we did after photographing the scene was gene-type him, just in case. And it turns out he's a city employee. Works for the New Avalon Water Company."
"What's so strange about that?" Abe asked. "City employees get murdered, too."
"He was a current city employee," Kane said. "He clocked out of his regular shift yesterday afternoon at 5, just like always. Last seen by the manager of his apartment building over on Williams at about 7:30, going out for an after-dinner jog. This man was alive less than 20 hours ago."
Hellboy hunkered down next to the body and looked it over. "Well, He sure doesn't look it, he said.
What could do this kind of thing to a person in less than a day? Gordon wondered.
Quite a lot of things, actually, said Abe.
Abe's right, Hellboy said, straightening up. We'll have to take this back to the Bureau with us and see if our lab guys can narrow it down. No offense, H, but your crew hasn't got the training or the equipment to handle a case like this. Depending on what killed this guy, he could come back to life at nightfall and start eating your lab techs or something.
Kane nodded. Well, he said, that's why we have your department, right?
Abe Sapien smiled thinly.
The last person to have your job didn't agree with that viewpoint, he said.
Kane chuckled. I like to keep an open mind, he said.
Although the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense was part of the International Police Organization, in fact, part of the IPO's Criminal Investigations Division, it was not housed at IPO headquarters downtown. There were several reasons for this, but the main and most important one was that the stuff the BPRD worked with on a daily basis was best kept out of the center of the city. Instead, the Bureau had its own separate headquarters, tucked away in green wooded hills a few miles northeast of Crescent Heights. 2 hours after being led to the desiccated corpse by Horatio Kane, Abraham Sapien was in one of the Bureau's labs, carrying out a careful and detailed examination of said corpse. As he finished up, the door opened and Hellboy entered, carrying a fat file folder in his left hand.
That's quite a file, Abe observed.
Hellboy nodded. Police reports, lots of them. Did you know people have been disappearing in Puckett's Landing for years?
Abe's fishy face looked unruffled.
People disappear all over the city all the time, he said. That happens in any big city, unfortunately.
Hellboy shook his head. This is different. Every year from about the end of September until the first snowfall, the disappearance rate in Puckett's Landing spikes. Look.
He propped the folder in his stone right hand, rummaged in it with his left, and took out a graph.
It never gets high enough to tip the cops off, but if you plot it over time, it's obvious. Something screwy is going on down there.
Abe would have raised an eyebrow if he'd had them.
Is that a technical term? He asked.
Hellboy put the chart away. Lise has the computer pulling all the stats from the NEPD right now. We'll have a better plot in an hour or so.
You find anything?
He asked.
A few things. Take a look at this.
Abe pointed to the side of the body.
Hellboy looked, then shook his head.
I don't see anything.
Abe reached to a small control panel at the side of the examination table and flicked a switch. The overhead light switched to an alternate mode, bathing the body in a purplish light rich in ultraviolet, and suddenly what he'd been pointing at became obvious. The body's torso had several rows of regular round marks impressed in it, wrapped around its trunk in a spiral pattern.
Huh, Hellboy said. Sucker marks. Some kind of tentaculid?
Abe nodded.
I believe so. All the signs are here. Massive dehydration, sucker marks, and crushing damage to the bones of the torso. This very regular laceration to the back of the skull, and a severe disruption of brain tissue. This man was killed by a chthonic being of some sort.
A brain sucker? Ugh. I hate brain suckers.
Well, there's more to it than that, Abe said. I suspect the damage to the body was just a side effect. From what little is left of the brain tissue, I took some psychometric readings, and they were almost completely flat.
Hellboy's face fell further.
You think there's a soul eater loose in New Avalon?
Maybe not loose, Abe said. If your theory about the disappearances is correct, it may be confined to a specific area.
Hellboy blinked. Puckett's Landing, he said.
As he and Hellboy entered the basement office, Abraham Sapien felt a brief sense of trepidation. It wasn't that Abe was a coward, or even that the basement was all that scary. It was just that he believed a wise man should always feel a little bit of fear when entering the domain of an oracle. As always, the feeling passed quickly, because Annalise Fleming wasn't particularly oracular. When they entered her office, the BPRD's resident computer expert was sitting with her combat-booted feet up on her desk, listening to antique electronic trance music at an imprudent volume, while an audio-to-video conversion program converted it to psychedelic patterns on her console's 60-inch semi-projective holographic display panel. A little more than 5 feet tall and 100 pounds soaking wet, odd turn of phrase, that, Abe had always thought, Annalise wouldn't be intimidating much of anybody anytime soon. With her hair, black streaked with neon green this week, in a pair of Viking-style plates and her wide-eyed, pug-nosed face, she was constantly being mistaken for a high school student.
In truth, she'd been out of high school since she was 12 anyway, and now was rather more than twice that age. Annalise was what the occult experts at the Bureau called a technomancer. She had a natural rapport with electronic equipment that went beyond simple technical aptitude. One of the BPRD's screeners described it in her pre-recruiting report by writing, "Miss Fleming loves computers, and they love her right back." Though the statement was an obvious oversimplification, it did often seem true. Computers had a way of, well, doing favors for Annalise. The data center wasn't her life, though, nor were computers her only area of expertise. She was also an authority on the extrasensory and occult uses of various mind-altering substances, as well as their more mundane applications. She had connections in the black and gray markets of a half-dozen civilizations and could acquire almost any substance for almost any purpose, which was a talent that came in handy on a surprising number of occasions for the Bureau. Today, Hellboy and Abe needed her primary talents, though, and it was obvious from what she was doing now that her work on their behalf was already done. Annalise wasn't one to goof off, and there was work waiting. "Wondered when you guys were going to show up," she said after pausing the music and switching back to the statistical system she'd been using. "Hey, HB, I got some prime Mego in the chill box for this weekend. You in?" Hellboy looked tempted, but hesitant. "We'll see. Yana might not be down with that." Annalise snorted dismissively, then made a whip-crack noise. "Just show us the stats," Hellboy said, sounding mildly aggrieved. "Sure, sure. How about you, Abe? Expand your consciousness?" "Thank you, no," Abe replied. "I make it a rule never to eat or smoke anything that once used language." Annalise shrugged equably. "Suit yourself, man," she said, then pulled up a graph. "Well, here's the chart of disappearances by time. You were right about the way it trends, HB. The rate is about the same in the landing as it is in the rest of the metro area for most of the year. But every October it spikes, stays that way for about a month, then tapers off just as winter's really starting to set in." "Strange," Abe mused. "What's stranger is this." She punched a couple of keys and pulled up a map of the Puckett's Landing District. With another key, she plotted the homes, in red, and workplaces, in blue, of the disappearance victims. "We don't know where most of the victims disappeared from, since in all but the latest cases the bodies were never found," she said. "But we do know where they lived and where they worked." "Scattered all over the landing in the north end of Docklands," Hellboy said. "That's not much help." "That's what I thought," Annalise said. "Then I had a thought. The police reports must have some information about these people's favorite haunts, right? I mean, if I disappeared, I would hope the cops would ask my friends where I like to hang out and check to see when the last time anybody saw me there was." Abe nodded. "That makes sense." "So I dug around in the reports and plotted any of those I could find as well." She punched a couple of keys and dropped a third set of dots, these in green, onto the map. Like the others, they were spread out all over the map, though there weren't as many of them. A lot of people's hangouts in any given neighborhood, Hellboy supposed, would overlap. "Not real helpful, yeah?" "Well, then I ran a statistical interpretation on the whole mess to try and find some kind of center point. I asked myself the question, is there a place in the landing that these people's lives revolved around, so to speak? And if so, what is it?" She entered a couple more commands. The red, blue, and green markers vanished, replaced by a sort of gray haze that settled over the holographic map. Geometric lines appeared, bisecting the cloud from various angles. All the lines converged on a single point, then shrank, drawing the cloud with them, until all that remained on the map was a single pulsing point of white light. Annalise turned around in her chair. "Now you tell me that's a coincidence," she said. Hellboy leaned closer to the map, his yellow eyes narrowing. "Well, I'll be damned," he muttered, then straightened up and turned to Abe. "Knight's Field." Abe slowly blinked his big black eyes. "The curse of the knights?" he said. "That's crazy," Hellboy said. "Not really," Annalise told him. "Remember the Hebron Tigers?" "They built their stadium on an ancient Etherian burial mound," Hellboy replied. "I'm pretty sure the same isn't true of the New Avalon Knights." "Yeah, but there's too much circumstantial evidence here to ignore," Annalise persisted. "The victims' lives centered, whether they knew it or not, on Knight's Field. The disappearances always start just after the end of the baseball season, when the Knights would be in the playoffs if they were ever any good. And this pattern started in 2385, the year the team came to town." Hellboy stared hard at the map for a couple of seconds, then nodded reluctantly. I guess it makes sense. Jeez, I just hate sports curses. He turned to Abe. Better get a sweep team together and start checking out the neighborhood around the ballpark. By evening, the reports were in and they were unanimous. Metaphysically speaking, there was something very strange going on in the vicinity of Knight's Field. Holy cow, Hellboy said as Abe entered his office. Check out these PK readings. Why haven't we noticed this before? We haven't been looking for it, Abe replied mildly. I have more bad news. Great, Hellboy grumbled. Lay it on me. Abe unrolled a sheaf of charts on Hellboy's desk. After taking a moment to orient himself with the top one, Hellboy realized it was an architectural drawing of a building, and not just any building. Hey, this is Knight's Field, he said. Where'd you get this? From the city planning office, Abe replied. Well, what about it? The architect's name is Vladislav Shandor, Abe said. Sound familiar? Hellboy's brow furrowed between his horns. Shandor, Shandor, he murmured, and his face fell. Aw, hell no, he said. Ivo Shandor, the designer of the Great Manhattan Spirit Antenna? Abe nodded. That's the one. Vladislav is apparently a descendant of his. He designed quite a number of buildings around the city, and in Coronet on Corellia before he moved here in 82. They all seem to be quite ordinary, but I can't say the same about Knight's Field. He peeled back the general arrangement drawing on the top of the sheaf, revealing a structural diagram beneath. Hellboy looked it over. Some very interesting geometry in this structural steelwork, he observed. Interesting materials, too, Abe said. Let me guess. Cold riveted steel girders with selenium cores. And or a calcium rivet caps along the main axes. In addition, the stadium happens to be sited at the intersection of two of the pseudo-continents, lesser ley lines. It seems Mr. Shandor is also a fair predictive geomancer, since those lines hadn't even formed yet when the building was erected. Hellboy looked at the structural diagram for a few more moments, then paged through the drawings below, his practiced eye catching details here and there that deepened his dread. Then he flopped the sheaf back to the general arrangement, plunked his stone hand down flat on top of it, and said, "The whole thing is a great big cage." Abe nodded again. "The question is, a cage for what?" Hellboy looked thoughtful for a moment, then asked, "This Shandor guy, is he still alive?" Abe shrugged. No one knows. He disappeared in 2402. In October? The fishman shook his head. He was reported missing by his housekeeper on April 17th. Huh. Well, either way, we can't ask him what's going on. Let's get Lise running some simulations to see what kind of entities this thing could hold in, Hellboy said. We can cross-reference what she comes up with against the body we found and see if anything matches. And when it does? Then we'll have to pay a little visit to Knight's Field.